E L R E E L R
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special edition of Extra Life Radio. This is not the normal show, as you can probably tell. You already got one of those this week, so double dose. I was originally going to have this just in the episode, but I enjoyed the interview so much, I thought I would put it here. The interview I did is with Daniel McNichol. He is the director of Reclaiming the Blade, a documentary film about the history of swords, swordplay, European martial arts, and the like, starring the likes of Viggo Mortensen, Carl Urban. Narrated by John Rhys Davies, legendary swordsman and sword choreographer Bob Anderson, and more and more. So check out this interview. I had a great time. Really wonderful to get to meet Dan. Enjoy this special episode of ELR. Welcome to Extra Life Radio, a special interview. This is Scott Johnson, of course. And on the line with me, I have somebody who I'm excited to talk about, not only because I've seen the movie we're going to talk about, but because I think you people will get a major kick out of this. He is the director of Reclaiming the Blade, a documentary about essentially the history of swords, swordplay, sword making, and all things swords. And it's awesome. His name is Daniel McNichol. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I love your website and what you do. It's very cool.
Well, thanks very much. I hope I said your last name right.
Yes, that is correct. McNichol.
All right. Cool. Got it. And you're not related to Christy McNichol.
No, I am not, unfortunately.
Or fortunately, I don't know.
I have to live with that burden, but I survive.
All right. You seem to be doing okay. Just to start things off, I had a chance to see a screening of the film last night. And yes. Listeners of my show know that I love, you know, anything that has to do with sort of medieval sort of sword play, whether it's fantasy or not. I really dig that stuff, and I know we have a lot of fans that do. When I sat down to watch this, I also came to it as a lover of documentary films in general, and so I had really high hopes, and I'm happy to say that most of them were met. I really enjoyed the film, and I'm pretty excited to talk about it. Let's just throw out a couple of quick questions to get us started. First of all, is this your first documentary film? Is this your first attempt to put something like this out?
Yes, it is. First film that we created Glacia Films, the production company, to basically be the shingle to kind of set up camp and produce this film. And so consequently, with this film and the connections we've made and just enjoying the process, we're involved in two other documentaries and a feature length narrative as well. But this is our first film. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Well, it's an impressive first outing. We've got actors that I know my fans will recognize, that stepped up to the plate to do interviews, guys like Viggo Mortensen, Carl Urban. Carl Urban's important, people, because he's the new Dr. McCoy in Star Trek. Just throwing that out there. A whole bunch of other guys, including Bob Anderson, who is known the world over, both in film and outside of film, as really the chief architect of some of the coolest choreography you've ever seen in movies that deal with swordplay, including Star Wars. And what awesome footage and conversation you have with this guy. All I could think about the whole time was, I hope his arm was all right.
Right.
Because he had it
in
the cast.
Yeah. He had just a bit of an accident and kind of rolled out of bed the wrong way or something. And it's not a glamorous sword fight accident, but nevertheless, he's doing much better. And he's a really great guy. I felt honored to have the time to sit down and talk to him about swords.
Yeah, he blew my mind. So I guess my first question is, with all these kind of high-level actor types, and one great thing about the movie, just so people understand, is that this isn't just, you know, the first sword was forged by blah, and it's not that kind of history. There's a lot of history, but there's a great piece of this, which is how we as a modern society view sword culture, and most of the time it's through film. So there's a chance to sort of talk to these actors that are known for their sword play, like Viggo Mortensen. So I guess my question is, was it hard getting these kind of people to sit down and talk about this stuff, and what was that experience like?
Well, if I could say something kind of as you kind of sparked something with me, and I'd like to mention actors today and celebrities are almost a bit like the aristocrats of yesteryear. The interesting thing about the history of the sword is The aristocrats and the nobility gave credence to martial arts with the sword of their time. So it's kind of funny that here we are, you know, hundreds of years later, and, you know, nobility is, I guess, a thing of the past. We live in a republic, and, you know, the French did away with their monarchy, and the Germans and the Russians. And so, you know, I mean, it's kind of a bygone thing. So, but I guess today's aristocracy is kind of like the Hollywood, stars. So it's funny how those stars are still giving, credence to the sword, kind of like in the ancient times when the nobility, the royalty of the different ages, they really got excited about swordplay, and it became something that was quite fashionable, you know. And once the nobility were, you know, intrigued with it, and you know, were studying under this master or that master, it really kind of gave a sword fighting a bit of legitimacy, because prior to that, it was kind of the shady business, you know,
sure,
of, studying an art to kill another man with a sword. So it was a bit dodgy, you know, if I can use that word. But, I guess that's kind of how it worked with us in the film. You know, I felt like to get the attention of folks, it might be good to sling together some of the people that are involved in swords and swordplay and fight choreography today, right. Which was kind of a difficult thing, because we had one foot in the martial arts community, and then we had another foot, you know, kind of residing in, I guess, what I would call Hollywood fight choreography. So that was a bit difficult to do in a way, because a lot of the martial artist groups were like, hey, you know, the Hollywood stuff's not completely accurate. You know, what are you doing talking to those guys? You know, it was kind of like we were always trying to, you know, make amends between these two groups. But the one thing I told the martial artists is that, look, you've got to appreciate, the fight choreography in films, because this is what inspires people. Every time I talk to a martial artist, though, they're draw or their initial love of the sword began with a movie.
Yeah.
So it was really easy to kind of dispel that and be like, you know, and the cool thing is a lot of movies, with directors like Ridley Scott and people that are really interested in historical accuracy, films have become, quite accurate. I think audiences have been interested in that, and the movie makers have kind of stepped up to that. That doesn't really answer your question, though. I think you originally asked about, how we got the players on board. It's a good question. You know, a lot of it started with Bob Anderson. Mm. I felt like Bob was kind of due a tribute. And so it was a long, hard road to track him down. And it just, you know, I didn't give up, and I finally was able to reach him. He's like a very hard-to-reach person. You know, you just don't look in the phone book for Bob Anderson. But And it seemed like I ran into a lot of brick walls. But once we did our interview with him, I think that helped a lot as far as, adding credence to the film. And of course, Viggo Mortensen had worked with Bob. He's a big fan of Bob Anderson, and he's a big fan of the sword.
Yeah.
So, and John Rhys-Davies, with him, it was just a matter of sending him the script. And once he read it, he was just like, wow, this is something I can – you know, I'm really interested in this subject. So it was we were lucky to find a narrator that we weren't just hiring, you know, because, you know, you can really get anybody to do anything if you have money.
Sure. And for fans that don't know, John Rhys-Davies is not only narrates the film, but those who are less familiar with his voice will know him as Gimli in Lord of the Rings. They'll know him as Sala in the Indiana Jones movies. He was on Sliders, less than awesome science fiction program, but awesome guy, and his voice immediately jumped out at me, and I just went, dude, I can't.
Yeah.
And it was, but yeah, you know, I think you hear him before you see his credit, and mm-hmm. I was like, who is this guy? This is driving me nuts. I know who this is. And there it was, and I was super excited. I kind of geeked out a little bit when that happened.
Well, we talked to other actors, and at one point that we were even thinking about I might narrate the film. That was kind of a last resort,
right?
And I really never wanted to go that route. And then one day we were returning from some filming, and we just said, you know, let's just go for it. Let's put the call out. And we talked to certain different people, and nobody had the excitement, you know, and I feel like he's become sort of a friend of the film and almost a producer in a way. So that's been good to have him on board help promote the film and, sure. and believe him and that sort of thing.
Sure, no, that's sure. awesome. Now, you made a comment earlier about the martial artists tend to be a little bit sometimes diametrically opposed to the Hollywood folk, even though there's sort of a connection there and all of that. It was really something that jumped out at me in the film when mm-hmm. I was reminded that this is a form of martial arts. We get it in our heads that martial arts automatically means Bruce Lee, Hong Kong Chinese, Japanese, Kung Fu, this and that and the other thing. And we don't think of those words. It's like hearing the term Kleenex. We forget it's a brand. We just think it's tissue. And we're just so used to it. When I heard them refer to this as Western martial arts, I'm not quite sure what sort of came up in my gut, but something like a sense of, that's right, there is a cool form of martial arts that comes from Western culture and society. That was a really cool thing for me to stumble on in the movie. And I know it's a small thing, yeah. but it's something I just never think about.
Yeah, I think it's a part of the film for sure to, you know, not only do a tribute to Bob Anderson, but to me the film is a bit of a tribute to these martial artists as well, because when I went online to research it, and as you do, you know, you go on the internet sure. to look stuff up, I saw all these groups, and I really didn't go online to do the research for this film. I had no idea I was researching for this film because I was actually researching for a screenplay that I was writing, and it's an epic sword and sandal, just a big budget Hollywood, lots of sword fighting. It's called Glastonbury Isle of Light. We actually, if I can give a plug,
sure.
We just signed David Mickey Evans to direct, and he did Radio Flyer and Sandlot in the 90s. He's just a really cool guy, and so he's on board to direct this film. But about 4 or 5 years ago, I was researching that when I was writing this script, because I was like, okay, was the ancient sword really used? I mean, what can I glean out there? And, you know, rather than travel to the Roman archives and, you know, go all over, but I went on the internet and I saw all these groups and these martial arts groups that were studying what they called historical European martial arts. And I was like, wow, I've never even heard of that. So it was almost like, once I started talking to them, it was like they were so eager to share their story, you know? It was I've used the analogy a lot that it was a bit like a, you know, just cracking a valve on something. It's just this floodgate of just information and passion about, you know, historical European martial arts. And we look at other martial arts too, like Samurai Blade a little bit too, and we're all keenly aware, I think, of those martial arts and how wonderful they are. But yeah, I mean, you know, Italy, France, Spain, Germany, England, I mean, these countries did have their own martial arts.
Now, were you surprised during the process, and maybe this is what drew you to the material in the first place, but the sheer depth of art, of the art of swordplay was kind of mind-blowing in this film. Was that surprising to you, and did that alter the way you were going to make this movie? I mean, did you feel like, holy crap, there's a lot here, we need to really be careful about what we pick and choose and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was very difficult to cull this thing down into an hour and 15 minutes or whatever it clocked in at. It was very difficult. There was just you know, we could have gone in a million different directions, but you know, I tried to let the sword guide us. I feel like if you've ever seen that movie, The Princess Bride, where yeah. You know, you've got the Spanish sword fighter, and he lets the sword guide him
yeah.
to find the secret hatch that leads him down into the dungeon. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of a poor analogy, but you know, I kind of just wanted to let it sounds hokey, but I wanted to let the sword kind of guide us and see where it would take us, and let that be the central character, because we ran into these very vibrant characters, and you're a fan of documentary films, so you're sure. I'm sure you're aware that there's the perspective documentary where it's from the perspective of the you know, the key character, you mm-hmm. know, whoever that might be, mm-hmm. and so everything's from him, his family, his life, what's going on, or him or her, and so you know, we thought about doing that because boy, did we have some really vibrant characters, but in the end, I thought it was best to stay away from that and really just make the focus be on the sword and find out what kind of story, looking at it, kind of stepping back and looking at it from a wide angle lens and just kind of seeing, okay, what's the mosaic here? You know, instead of, you know, it's so easy to do history and dive in on one area and then zoom back out and dive in here, and you really don't get a big picture. So my goal was to kind of just step back and look at it all and try to make some sense of it. See if there was any meaning behind any of it. And hopefully we kind of I don't think we answered all of the questions, but that's okay. I hope we brought up some new ones and maybe just got people thinking and talking about it.
Absolutely. Bob Anderson's connection is interesting to The Princess Bride as well. That really great sword fight between now I forgot the stupid character's name, but that fight where they switch hands a couple of times. That is an awesome scene. I had no idea he was connected with that, but it's awesome. Sure. Some of my favorite sword scenes in the history of film, that one included, anything in Star Wars and all of Lord of the Rings really had Bob Anderson's name on him, and that's I not to go back to him again, but he's a
sure,
quite the prolific
mean, no,
guy.
He's a legend. I mean, Zorro, Pirates of the Caribbean, Robin Hood, Errol Flynn. I mean, goodness, the guy. You know, and what's funny about him is I think some of his interview is included in the special features bonus disc that we have, which, if I may give a plug for that as well, it's about 4 hours long of extra features.
Wow.
There's actually training videos on there for sword fighting, Asian martial arts, historical European martial arts. There's even some really cool grappling stuff if you're into Watchmen or Dark Knight. I've really seen even hand-to-hand combat change in film.
Yeah.
So there's even some of that hand-to-hand combat stuff in there. So it's really cool.
Yeah.
But at any rate, getting back to Bob, yeah, I mean, one of the things he said that really kind of spoke to me is he said, "I don't think I found the sword. I think the sword found me." You know, it's like it was just for him. It was kind of just he was meant to do that. You know.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the film, and you said this in two different ways. You said, you know, I let the sword guide me, or the sword brings me, or the sword called me to do this, or all that kind of talk is very consistent with the tone of the film, which is the sword is so much more than a piece of metal that's designed to cut a dude.
Yeah.
It's designed as a symbol of strength, of honor, of all these different things, and it plays so well in Hollywood. And gosh, Bob Anderson's entire career, from Errol Flynn till you just said Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm sure he worked on the third one. That is a huge career. As far as I'm concerned, he owns the Hollywood sword fight.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can't. You know, there are a lot of men and women that are like big names in stunt choreography and even swordplay. He's up there though for sure. I mean, with swordplay, he's at the top for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But not to undermine some other wonderful choreographers and stunt people.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah. There's bound to be plenty. Now, I got a question for you regarding the impact of popular culture on the sword. We've talked about movies. Do you think video games play any role here?
Absolutely. You know, it was funny because we were looking for some sponsors at one point, and we actually did find a sponsor in Hasbro, which was great because Hasbro produces the Force FX lightsabers.
Oh yeah.
Let me give another plug for them. I'm all about just giving plugs here. I hate to be so commercial, but no, these things are great. I mean, the Hasbro Force FX lightsabers, we're giving a bunch of them away, and they're just fantastic. You know, the whole real lightsaber, I call it a real lightsaber, but you know, it's the closest thing we have today. Hopefully technology will give us a real lightsaber someday, but
yeah, I've got a really cool blue one in the corner over here that I like to pull out and freak kids out with.
Really?
Again. Oh yeah. I love these things.
What is it? A Force FX?
It is. It is.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome. I totally
agree. You know how cool they are. Yeah. But so we were looking for sponsors and I was thinking about maybe some video games. So I did a bit of research for a short while, but yeah, I was just amazed at how many video games were steeped in the tradition of the sword.
Oh yeah, I mean, if I can tell you this, and I'm an avid player of World of Warcraft, and while that game doesn't attempt to do anything realistic with swords, acquiring them and getting the best one and spending hours and hours and hours grinding in that game in order to acquire the ultimate sword, to me speaks to the greater thing, which is swords are symbolic of power, hard work, and sort of perseverance. And I think video games sort of reflect that probably.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's interesting about Star Wars is, and this is mentioned in the film, I believe, but you know, here we are, we're off in the future, you know, in a galaxy far, far away where you would think swords would be completely obsolete. And yet, in a brilliant move, George Lucas incorporates the sword into the future. And I think that's really one of the reasons why it left an indelible mark on our psyche as kids growing up, you know?
Yeah.
You take the lightsaber out of Star Wars, and you don't have Star Wars, my friend. I don't think you do.
No, I completely agree. It's a symbol. It's not only become a symbol of those films, but it was such a novel, unique idea at the time.
Yeah.
That is so hard to copy without looking like you're copying it, you know?
What's fascinating is the themes that you run into time and time again. Robin Hood, for instance. Robin Hood was, you know, just to romanticize about his character. I know there are historians out there that believe that Robin Hood, the legend, is based on this or that. But, you know, aside from that, just looking at, you know, the romantic version of Robin Hood, I mean, he was fighting against social injustice. You know, he was the small man fighting against, he was a rebel against, you know, I guess an empire, if you will. Just like in Star Wars, where you have the few Jedi fighting against, you know, the empire. And so I think there's these themes keep coming back to us in movies. And Lord of the Rings, you know, same thing. You've got, you know, almost like an absolute power is really what they're trying to get away from, and you have this small band of you know, the Fellowship, and how they're seeking to you know, live free, basically. So that's interesting too, I think.
Yeah, those themes in the movie were really, really interesting to me. I had to say this though. I noticed that as the movie went on, I thought, my gosh, he's like all over the place. Did you do a lot of traveling in this movie? It seemed like you were all over the world.
Yeah, we actually traveled quite a bit. We went all over Europe, and the European groups were, you know, it's impossible to not go to Europe and talk. I mean, if you're going to do a documentary on the swords, I mean, you know, that's where I guess it all took place. I know we had the rapier probably for a short time in the United States here in North America, but you know, around that time, that's when the gun kind of prevailed in that battle, and the sword kind of was left to sporting, you know, more of a sport and less of a lethal art. But yeah, so it was impossible not to. And you know, the opportunity to go to Weta Workshop and do all of that with Richard Taylor and those guys, that was a lot of fun too.
I was incredibly jealous. That was the part of the movie that made me wish that I was there, because that's amazing. We you know, there's lots of nerds out there that see anything Weta does and goes, oh, dude, you know, that's amazing stuff. And I got to ask this question. You may not be able to tell us this, and that's okay. But when you were there, did you see – and when were you filming there? How long ago was it?
It was quite a while ago. It was probably a good year and a half ago, which speaks to the amount of time that we spent
on the film. Film.
Yeah, it was really about a three-year process.
Well, that seems recent enough in my mind that this question is valid. Supposedly, Weta Workshop is doing all the effects work and sort of puppetry and makeup and everything for the upcoming World of Warcraft movie that Blizzard is commissioning. My question is, did you see any evidence of that at the Weta Workshop?
I did not. I can't. Honestly, I'm not being secretive here. I really don't know.
Fair enough. I had to ask it, though.
I did. That's fair enough. I didn't do any investigating, so
fans would kill me if I didn't ask.
I can't say, but I'll tell you what, though. That would be a smart match, as they say.
I believe so. I believe it would be, too. Now, one thing a lot of people may not know about you, those who do know about you, is that you're also a musician. And people can actually check out your 2007 album release, Love Suffers Long, on iTunes if they're interested. But I got a question. Will we see any extras in the DVD extras that involve your own music? Or was any of your own music used in the film?
Yes, I did throw a couple of my own tracks on there. But I must say, it wasn't because they were great or that I really wanted to do some self-promotion. It was really a necessity in that I'm sure you know that you have to pay licensing fees for all the music you use. So obviously, my music was free. So, but really, it's a very there's only two of my songs in there, and they're a couple of small cues. Our composer, David James Nielsen, really did a fantastic job. I thought he wrote the orchestral score So we actually hired a composer to write a sort of an epic sounding orchestral music. And that to me was important because, you know, it seems maybe a bit over the top for a documentary, but at the same time, you know, of working out these themes of the sword, I felt like it deserved that epic treatment. And I kind of wanted to make the documentary, you know, a bit like a journey, if you will, and less of just a sterile, you know, I know the History Channel does a lot of documentaries on you know, the history of warfare and whatnot, but they're always so sterile and they never have a sense of artistry to them. I don't think so. And they're also, I think there's so many people that have to approve the process, you know. It's hard to be an artist when you have a million producers that are like, you can't do that, no, you can't do that, can't do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what are you left with at the end? But like, you know, just some very dry, basic, boring, you know, documentary on some historical subject. But
yeah, that works for some people. In my case, it doesn't work as well. I like your approach, partially because there were a lot of different voices that were heard in this. You had, mm-hmm. you had hardcore, ancient, that's probably a bad word, but like, you know, mm-hmm. very experienced historians, European historians that knew all sorts of things. But at the same time, you're like, all right, here's these guys that have these regular groups now in Europe and other places, and they get together and they have these reenactments. Here's the reenactments that are more like sort of the Ren Faire, sort of LARPer crowd. And over here, you got these guys that are really serious about the moves, the sword types. You have the guys that make the swords as hobbies. You have guys that make the swords for movies. It was like a really great sort of, you know, everybody's talking, not just who used swords and when. It was more like, you know, who's using them now, and look how diverse this is.
Right. You know, if I felt like, honestly, 3 years ago, I felt like the Discovery Channel would do what we were doing, I wouldn't have bothered, you know?
Right.
But I felt like there was a new approach. There was another way of doing this. And incidentally, we're working on another documentary on castles. Not just castles, but archaeological digs, bringing it to the present again. And archaeological digs at castles and what they're finding, and so it's I want to kind of do the same thing with another exciting thing for me, you know. But so hopefully, you know, hopefully people will appreciate that, and you know that's why we did it, because we felt like, you know, there's a different type of approach. It's a different kind of documentary. I don't want to say we've defined a new category or anything, but I can't really liken it to anything, you know. It's the closest thing I can think of is it's a bit like Riding Giants, which is a film that I think is amazing. It's a documentary on surfing that Stacy Peralta did, who you may, if you skateboarded in the 80s, that you definitely remember Pal Peralta, you know, is that those great skateboards, you know. And Stacy grew up in skateboarding, and he was the one to tell that story, you know. It was all about Dogtown and Z-Boys, and he did that documentary before that. But a really good documentary on surfing.
Oh, I loved Dogtown and Z-Boys. That was awesome.
Yeah, great film. So, you know, I tip my hat to directors like Stacy Peralta, who, you know, kind of took, you know, a subject like skateboarding or surfing and did a documentary on it and really brought some life into it. You know what I mean?
I totally agree.
Yeah, real people and real emotions, and kind of, he wasn't hindered or shackled by, you know, having to do sort of a dry expose of something. So,
okay, my question then is, do you plan a sequel, and is it about guns, or is that even just like not a good idea?
Well, no, that's funny. We actually have so much footage, and I think that's why our special features are 4 hours long. And, you know, again, that's another odd thing. I mean, who does a documentary film and then releases it as a two-disc set, you know?
Rare.
It's just kind of bizarre. But there was all this extra interviews, you know, with Viggo Mortensen. There's a great interview with him talking about Arendal and Narsil and the Flame of the West and, you know, what that meant to him and how he protected it. And, you know, we couldn't fit that in the film, but yet it was a great portion of his interview. So we snuggled that in there. Lots of great extra stuff with Weta Workshop that we were unable to include in the film. And so we really just jam-packed it with a lot of extra stuff. Having said that, even you know, exhausting all those resources, there are still a lot of stories to be told about the sword. And I would love to do sort of a Reclaiming the Blade 2 type thing. Who knows? But it would definitely be about swords, because There's just a lot more to discover there, but you know, I couldn't set a date or anything, and I really think, well, let's just start with this one and see.
Yeah, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, this is really cool stuff. I really, really enjoyed the film. I'm excited for people I know to be able to see it. I guess the next question is when will people be able to get their eyeballs on Reclaiming the Blade?
Well, it's actually for pre-order now on our website, and it's going to be on iTunes and shipping March 30th of this month. So literally in about 5 days, it will ship from our site, and it will be available for download on iTunes. The iTunes movie will not include the four-hour bonus disc. Mm. And then May 5th is when we're actually starting our retail distribution. Some of the distributors include Walmart and Barnes & Noble, and, of course, all the online stuff like Amazon. So really everywhere DVDs are sold, brick and mortar and online, we're going to try to get it out there and do some publicity this summer, some fun stuff. So look for us out there. We'll be at the conventions, and we'll be out doing in-store events and just kind of traveling around the summer promoting the film.
Very cool. Well, once again, Daniel, this looks really exciting. I'm really excited after seeing this to see some of your written chops on this Glastonbury Isle of Light is the actual title, right?
Yes, that's correct. I'm really excited about this movie. This is what kind of drew me into filmmaking. I actually worked in the music industry for a while. I worked for Broadcast Music Incorporated, BMI. I actually went to school for music industry related stuff, copyright law and stuff like that. So that's another thing I should probably say. That's kind of how I was able to segue into film. You know, in the 90s, the music industry bottomed out. You know, actually, the record company I worked for that I was doing radio promotions for, they let me go. I got laid off, you know, because with the MP3, it just changed everything.
Sure.
So it was time to find a new job. And it's funny, there's been a couple of music industry people that have segued into film. So I'm kind of one of those cats. But, you know, I mean, I think music and film go so well together. And for me as a filmmaker, you know, it always starts with the music. So Lakeshore Records will be putting out our soundtrack. So yet another plug. It'll be good. Soundtracks really don't do that well these days, but it's going to be available. And again, David's score was great. And there's a couple of indie pop tracks on that too.
Yeah,
as well.
And the score is super epic. And I know that listeners of this show, anyway, I know there's going to be interest there. So watch for that as well. Well, Daniel McNichol, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I wish you nothing but the best of luck in all your future projects and all the success in the world with Reclaiming the Blade.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate taking the time and for you having me on.
Hey, thanks everybody for listening to this special episode of Extra Life Radio. Thanks again to Daniel for that interview. We really appreciate it. As always, make sure you check out the feed for the actual ELR Normal show, which is being released the same day. So if you're getting this show and you didn't hear the other one, that's probably because if you're using iTunes, for example, it skipped that one and you can just go manually download it. Should be right there in the feed and good to go. So yeah, bonus. We like a bonus. But thanks again, everybody. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next time, maybe for another special episode of ELR. Take care. Per un barbiere di qualità, di qualità.